So now Mishnah Ches. Now we're going to visit the Psul of Russia, a wicked person. So everyone agrees it's a non-starter that anyone who's a Russian midoraisa is for sure not kosher as an aid, not for Bamanos and the Fashas, and also not for Kiddush HaChodesh. What we are going to discuss here is people who have the status of a Russian midorabanan. No, they're not over doraisa crimes, but they're guilty of, let's say, moral turpitude when it comes to money. Like they do things for the sake of financial gain that are, you know, unscrupulous, let's say, in the eyes of halacha, and therefore, even though they're not over a technical category which makes them to a Russia, but still, the rabbis of these people are not to be trusted, and therefore we're not going to trust them. You know, we're afraid someone's going to be bribing them, essentially, and therefore, since it's bribery potentially involved, we're not going to trust them to give testimony. So they're going to be a total of four. We'll have four psulim that are a Russia midrabanan. Okay. The first of four is, so it says, Elohen Hapsulin. These are the categories of people who are puzzle, besides the obvious Doraisa ones. The first is Hamasachek Bakuvia. Literally means one who plays with dice. And it means a dice player, any gambler, essentially. If a person gambles, we think that they're... Well, the truth is a Machlokas. The Machlokas is an Edrin in Chaf Hei, I think. Between Rav Shesus and Ram Bar Chama. What exactly the reasons for the psul of gambling. According to Rav Sheshes, the issue is that a person who is a gambler is, he's not involved in, like, Yeshiva Sholom, and not involved in, like, contributing to society. He's not a contributing player, he's not helping to develop the world, and therefore he's already, like, a social outcast on some level.
Professional gambler.
Professional gambler.
Like Sandwich. The Lord of
the Earl of Sandwich,
The Earl of Sandwich was so busy gambling that he didn't have time to eat, and he made up a porridge,
right.
Which became known as a sandwich.
That's right. So, if you're a professional gambler, then but to get the svara is, if you're a professional gambler, then you're like sort of a social outcast, because like you're not involved in the world, you're like, and therefore, you know, I guess how you imagine like some, like, you know, well, some like poker player sitting in the, you know, in the Wild West, like, you know, you're a bit of like an outlaw on some levels, even though you're not, and because of that you won't mind being like a disgrace, and you won't mind taking bribery. That's the thing. You're interesting, you said about Madoff. An interesting aside. When I was a bachar, I once asked Rav Yaakov Weinberg if there's any careers that I definitely shouldn't go into. So he told me, you can do anything you want, is good, except don't be a paper shuffler. Don't be like a trader, because the traders, like a stock trader, and so they don't. He meant stock trading, not like a paper pencil pusher, because he says, you know, stock trading essentially is. Doesn't contribute to the development of the world. There's no net gain to the world. You know, you're making money off, you know, thin air, but no societal benefit. And it was a sad, ironic story is that I proceeded to become a hedge fund manager. So that's exactly, we're involved in arbitrage, trading money on selling. Anyways, but that's another story. He meant day trading, but I think maybe he meant hedge fund managing also. It's not a great deal of difference. Anyways, so for the record, although day traders really are gamblers, end of story, but they'll argue, and certainly like with a veneer of like the hedge fund manager, they'll argue that what they're doing is providing liquidity to the markets, right? Which there is some modicum of value to that people, but anyways. Liquidity is a good thing. I don't know if you know that. Remember in March, May 6th of this year, there was this flash crash. I know someone who lost a lot of other people's money. A lot of other people's money. Went down for, like, you know. So that can happen. That would happen much worse if there weren't a lot of people in the market keeping things efficient. Okay. The other thing I want to say, perhaps, is if you take, as I described it, if you take Rav Sheshes on face value, so I don't think hedge fund managers today, they may or may not be contributing, depending on what their strategy is, but they're still not outlaws. They're not like outcasts of society, really.
Cool.
Right? Okay, fine. But I'm saying, so it could be, even if you're just an unabashed day trader, I don't think people look at day traders today as being gamblers. I don't think they do. And therefore, I don't think they hold themselves as being the chashuv of people. And therefore, this may not apply anyways. Okay? That's that. What? Maybe. I wonder how many day trading, just a word to the wise, if you're thinking about it. Day trading.
Can you explain what a day trade is?
High frequency, without using the technical term that they talk about in the hedge fund world, someone who's doing high frequency stock trading, basically buying and selling throughout the day.
For
themselves, typically.
For themselves.
For the record, it's not a good business to be in anymore. Even if it was a good business once upon a time, it's not a good business to be in. It's just not a profitable business nowadays. No one believes me when I tell them this, but believe me, I know. Anyways, so that's that. The second approach is Ram Bar Chama, who learns the issue with a gambler is that we're applying to even like recreational gamblers, people who have a normal day job but gamble on the side. He says they're still puzzle for Eidus because they're essentially gazlanim in the rabbanim. They're thieves. The reason why is like a bit of lumdus here, an idea of asmachta. But the point is that when people go and sit down to play poker together, like really, I don't think I'm going to lose. If I thought I was going to lose, I wouldn't be in the game in the first place. And therefore, really, even though I end up paying you the money, and therefore it's not gezel midoraisa. You didn't like put a gun to my head, but really, you're taking my money against my will in a way, and therefore it's like you're a low level, I don't know, subordinate thief.
Horses.
We'll get there in a second. But okay, the Rambam learns. Okay, wait, but the Pasha says any kind of gambling is asur.
Even
part time. I don't know. Lottery ticket is an interesting question. I'm not sure about lottery ticket. Well, I'll pay a shkafa me, but I don't think lottery ticket is the same way. There are people. So let me tell you lahalach a little bit. Lahalacha most Rishonim learn. Like the first opinion of Sheshes. In other words, you're only puzzle if you're a professional gambler. Okay, if you make your living as a poker player, whatever it is. But if you're just a recreational gambler, then you're not puzzle. Okay, that's A. So then that's essentially the halacha. That's what the Olam's knowing. The Rambam is actually mashmal like even B. Okay, even like Rav Ram Bar Chama, that if you're like a low grade thief if you're a gambler. Now, I looked at this a little bit because I have a stepbrother who's a professional gambler. But that's not why I look at him, actually. No, really, he's like this kid genius who's like, however old he is now, I don't know, 25. I don't exactly know his strategy. I don't really even know him. He's a stepbrother of mine. I don't even really know him because they got married after I left home. But he makes his living going around the world playing poker. But the reason why I looked into him more is because I ran a few casino nights when I was in Aish, and we ran some poker events and so on as fundraisers. The London Basin didn't like it so much. That's all. But anyways, we did it. What? Yeah. So they weren't so impressed with that. They thought it wasn't nice. But anyways, here is the svara for those who are matar, this kind of stuff. Basically, they say I don't know if you're familiar with poker. I don't talk about every game is different, but poker, it's interesting. They have all sorts of gambling laws. They wrestle with this also in the secular world also. Like in America now, they define it as games of chance, which is like a big question. It's like, you know, is backgammon a game of chance and so on?
Backgammon.
Yeah. Right? Or poker for that matter. Yeah, you may think poker is a card game, but if you notice, good poker players always win, so it's not just luck. There is luck and there's also skill, and backgammon is the same. In any case, so I don't want to get into that definition. That's not the Torah definition. But the poskim who allow the gambling business and don't say you're puzzle like the Rambam even, say like this. If you play poker, the way it works essentially is you buy in. So you put in your 10 or 100 or $1 million, and you get a stack. So you get a stack of chips. So you put in your $50, and that's how it usually works. Like you're at a poker night, whatever poker event. Basically, people, it's like a $100 buy-in. Everyone puts in $100 and gets a set of chips, and then they play throughout the evening until they run out or until they win. So they call that you're not. Everyone at the beginning essentially is agreeing to pay $100 for entertainment for the evening. That's how they look at it, which is no different than paying $100 to go out for dinner and a movie, whatever it is. So, chas v'shalom. So, but So, but that's you're paying for entertainment. So if you're doing you're buying in ahead of time. You're basically you're putting in money and you're playing. Yeah, that's your entertainment for the evening. And you, like you're walking in knowing you're like you've given the money away. And if you win, it's like you know, it's like a lottery, so to speak. In other words. So yeah. So exactly. So that was the sweepstakes. I don't get that either. No, really, they did it for different Israeli law, because of taxation and the lottery. They call it a sweepstakes, and if you notice, all the this is not for halachic reasons, I don't think. He said no purchase necessary. I don't know if you saw that. That's something else. I don't know. But the halacha, that's the how it all plays out. Bottom line is this. The halacha does not look fondly upon gamblers. How do you like it? No matter how you like it, you're probably not puzzle, leaving the Rambam out of it. The halacha, you're probably not puzzles and aid if you're a recreational gambler, and it may even be mutter. If you look at it, if like it is like sort of like occasional entertainment where you basically you do like how I described, could be even it's mutter to do like that. And but right, then it's not right.
So if somebody asks you to be an aider of the possum, you've got to say I take a lottery ticket once a month.
Right, the lottery tickets are probably okay. That's not gambling. But I don't know if when you play poker, there's like the buy-in round, the buy-in version. And there's a sort of like the like the cash games, I don't know if they call it cash games, or you're putting your money in your pocket every time. That would be this case of Masach Makuvia. So any kind of gambling is going to be a problem. Midrabban, okay, fine, like we defined. The second case is umalve beribis. These are people who lend money for interest. Now ribis, of course, is an issur d'oraisa, and actually someone who's involved in lending with interest. Is the Russia category? There's malchus involved in that. You're not allowed to do that. It's a severe no. No, it's actually according to Rambam, it's a mitzvah to lend. You have to lend at interest for a gentile.
Right.
Yeah, but to a Jew, you're not allowed to lend with interest. Okay. We'll discuss it in Ezra Neshek. We'll get in the above Metzi. We'll discuss this more. It's a good question. So the answer is this has to be exactly right. We're not talking about someone who lends ribis midoraisa because he's possible for sure. We're talking even someone who lends. Ribis midurabanan. So what does that mean? Without getting like too technical here, it has to be what's called to be the rice. It's called ktsutsa. Essentially, it means that you ahead of time say you're paying me, you know, 10% a year, whatever the story is. Like that's normative, what we call interest. However, the halakas of ribis midurabanan are very strict. I'm sure you're familiar. You can't essentially give any fringe benefit at all to the lender. So.
If you didn't,
right? That's like to the point of machlokas to smanazeh. But the point is, yeah, but that to that degree, whatever. Forget that issue per se. But that's a separate discussion. But the point is, you know, if letting him like you know also have the fringe benefit of you know staying in your guest house or something like that, and you know even you know didn't cost you money anyways because it was empty or so on, that would be ribis if you're doing it because he would lend you money. But ribis midirabanan. Okay, so you're giving him side benefits or favoritism or anything. That's considered. That's not d'oraisa ribis. You're not charging interest, but if the borrower lets the lender have any sort of material benefit other than repaying the cash, exactly, then that's a d'rabbanan, and that would also be aser. And by the way, both the lender and the borrower become possible for edus in such a situation. So, no lending at ribis, even d'rabbanan. The third case is mafriche yonim. So now, it means like bird chasers. Let's call it. So there are two pshatim brought down. One pshat is that it's talk like bird racing, like they used to race birds, seek a fazer. One of the first games that came out of the Macintosh was this bird racing game, I remember. Anyways, back in 1985 or whatever. I don't know why to think of that, I have no idea. Anyways, but it is a sport. You look at me because I'm crazy, that's why. They don't do bird racing today, they do horse racing today, but in those days they did bird racing. They basically.
They dog racing.
They have. I think the way it used to work back then is they would. Essentially, don't have a track per se, but they'd have like a fixed location, train their birds to come, homing pigeons, to come back to this pole, whatever it is. Then they'd stand far away and let the things go and see who gets the pole first as a winner and collects the prize. So that's some learn. That would essentially be kind of redundant from Masach Bukuvia, but that's how it is. The other shot is a different kind of thing altogether. It's got to do with people who train their, I guess this was the sport back then or whatever, crime, whatever you call it, people would train their birds to lure other people's birds from their like dovecote and bring it back with them. Essentially he's stealing other people's birds, but the way he's doing it is in a way that's not really stealing per se. He's just letting his bird do his thing, and the bird is clever enough to go and bring back other people's birds to his coop. So
it's very common in New York and the Bronx Hispanic community. They pigeons on the roof, and they train their pigeons to try to lure the pigeons of other people. And then afterwards, they used to trade back.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you like that?
Somebody worked for me used to do that.
But what was the actual value of the pigeons in the first place?
No, it's so bad. It's just like a hobby. You train the pigeons to come back.
Oh, I see. It's like baseball cards. Trading baseball cards. So in those days, birds were like used for communication and stuff like that. They actually had a value, right? I saw an article in the last...
Carrier pigeons,
exactly. They're valuable. They're trained. They're trained, yeah.
Imagine someone setting out to catch the carrier pigeon.
I saw an article. That's what happened. That's what happened. In what is the story? There is a story like that. The story is, I'm trying to remember it here. What is the story? In the war, I don't know which. I can't remember if it was one of the world wars or a lesser war. I don't remember anymore. I think it was actually World War, maybe World War I, if that's possible. And what's that Jewish banking family called? The
Rothschilds.
The way the Rothschilds made like a huge fortune is the war ended.
Well, they had the
Battle of Waterloo. Battle of Waterloo? You remember the story? I don't remember. Yeah. If you tell it, it's like fading my mind.
Well, they had advanced knowledge that the British had won and the French did. And on the stock exchange, the Rothschilds started to sell British securities.
Right.
They were selling securities, and they realized that he had must be in the note. The price fell, and then bought everything back.
Right. The Rothschilds had this enormous network of whatever. They had a network, information network, and the part with the carrier pigeons. And they used carrier pigeons to say who had won the war, and they caused a run on the market, a downward run, like collapsed the market, and then they made a killing.
Anybody else would have bought, but he realized it.
Right. They'll follow. Exactly. So he was a very, very dirty thing. So he'd sold even though he should have been buying, and then he... Yeah, okay, fine. So that's that. That's how they made their fortune. They made like... I think they made like $1 billion in those days, money, in like one day or something, idiotic investment. Anyways, so it was... Yeah. No good. Exactly. Bottom line, exactly right. Okay, and the fourth category here is Besochrei Shvias. People who do business with Shvias. Shemitah produce. Again, of course, not Midoraisa, but even Midoraban. And I'll remind you, by the way, that just recalling back to Shvias, if you remember. So whether or not Shvias applies today or not depends on like a few things. First of all, if land has to be Kadosh, and if the Kadosh of Bais Shemi still sticks into effect or not, and even if the Kadosh is still in Eretz Yisrael, it's still, according to Machlokas, if it's Talion Yovel being in effect, meaning that you have to have a row of Jews back in Israel and the Shvatim back in their... in their proper places, and the Beis Yosef Tur, Beis Yosef both Paskin, unlike some Rishonim, but many, and the Beis Yosef who's like Shulchan Aruch, bottom line, post Paskin that Shemitah today is only Midurabanan. So therefore, even though you're doing business with Shemitah produce, which is only Midurabanan, still you'd be possible for Edis, for Kiddush Chodesh. Okay, and now we're saying something else. Va'avadim. Avadim is not a fifth category. These are non-Jewish slaves, and they're not only they're possible already Midoraisa. The reason it's brought here in this Mishnah, after everything I just told you before, is it got to the Havamin about Reb Shimon maybe allowing them. I don't get into it. The point is, Avadim is possible even in Doraisa, and you might have had Havamin and not for whatever reasons, but they're also still possible. Zeh Klal, this is the principle. Kol Edu She'ein HaIsha K'sher La, anytime a woman is not kosher, so in Afhen, these first four, the Rabbanan Rishayim, they also aren't kosher for this edus. But anything that a woman could give testimony on, these edim that are only possible midrabanan could still give edus. So that would mean, for example, the most famous kind of case is when you have like what we call modern day aguna situation, where the husband, a man has died. Even if you have one witness, that'll be enough to matzah the widow now to marry someone else. The other cases too, like if you only need one aid for the case of a sota, if a woman's a sota, and then she, and the husband warns her, and then they even have one witness who sees the wife seclude herself with the person who the husband is jealous of, so then that's enough to stop the sota, the water, from being drunk. Like, we're not going to drink it if we have even one person saying that she was with this man. Okay, so there are other cases. So they'd be kosher for those kind of things.
What you said,
a woman is kosher for edus for things like I told you. Those things I told you, like for yeah.